WQZ. Anybody out there? Early check-in.
Yeah, William, I'm here.
Roy, Bob asked me to be a co-host with you tonight. Did you get that message from him? I didn't see any acknowledgement except a thank you from him. So I just said, hey, here I am.
Yeah, I got it. I acknowledged his message to him.
Okay, well, anyway, I'll be around. So I'm listening in, and when you introduce me, we'll talk and see what we can come up with, see if anybody has any good questions.
Okay, that's a plan.
And get Echolink to work on the other phone, so I'm standing by.
Okay. Welcome to everyone joining us here tonight on the Kings County Radio Club's Technical Question and Answer Net. My name is Roy. My call sign is AC2GS, and I will be your net control operator for this informal net. I will be your host, and William, AC2ZV, will be my co-host on this exploration into amateur radio technology. The purpose of this net is to provide a platform for discussion and to offer other answers as well as promote conversation among all participants of this net. The club maintains an archive of these technical nets on its webpage, and we also offer original articles and reviews on many of the topics covered during these technical nets. We will be offering a streaming service for those who cannot receive our repeater signal. Just point your browser to stream.kc2rc.com. We also have an Echolink node available for use. Just point your Echolink application to the node kc2rc-r. This net is scheduled for the second and fourth Wednesday of each and every month. All of this information can also be found on our club website, which is www.kc2rc.com. Members as well as non-members are welcome to participate, although we do appreciate it when our fellow hams join our club. And as always, an application is readily available on our club's website. No question is too simple. No question is dumb. All wisdom begins with the asking of questions. If you have a question, it deserves to be answered. Our format tonight will be to ask for participants to check in only if they have questions or comments for this net. Please give us your first name, your call sign, whether you have a question or a comment. The net will then address each question in order. I will try to provide a cogent answer, and William AC2ZV will join in as well. If any other listener has any further facts or opinions, they will be free to break in with the word comment, and when recognized, offer their knowledge or experiences to us all. If anyone has any questions for future suggestions for future topics of interest, please let us know either here, or you could use our email address, which is tech@kc2rc.com. And now I would like to introduce my co-host for this net, William AC2ZV. Good evening, William.
Hi, this is AC2ZV checking in over Echolink. How's everybody doing tonight? Looking for some interesting questions out there. Back to you, Roy.
Okay, very good, William. I hope we have participants. It's not the greatest date for a net, the night before Thanksgiving, but I figured, what the heck, we can at least try. So if we do have people out there listening who have questions, who have topics that they would like to roll around and discuss, please hit that push to talk and introduce yourself. Give me your first name, your call sign, and if you got a comment or you got a question for tonight. Well, it looks like it's going to be a rather quiet night tonight, William.
Yeah, Roy, I'm thinking about something Thanksgiving, and I was wondering if you actually had a Thanksgiving puzzle. And so you go to so much trouble putting the puzzles out, we never get to do them. So did you put one out recently?
No, I put that on hold for the time being until we get more than, say, one person showing up for this net, you know, because it is some work, and I don't mind doing the work, but if I do it and I'm just kind of talking to you or to Bob, and only you or Bob, it doesn't seem to be worth the trouble to do something like that. I would like to see a little bit more participation among both members and non-members, you know, in the Brooklyn area. So if I see the activity going up from its present, you know, zero to one, I'll consider kind of returning to the puzzles. But for the time being, it just seems like more effort than it warrants.
Say, Roy, I'm getting a lot of interference over my radio as I'm talking and stuff like that. I get a lot of noise just blasting in. It comes in and out. I'm better off using the Echolink, because I can hear you much clearer over the Echolink than I can on my radio. It's been a recent problem. It may be welding over there with the jail, because they're putting up this big seal.
Yeah, that could certainly cause a problem like that. Hopefully it's self-limited. They'll get their work done and pack their tools and to go someplace else, and you'll be rid of them. But that's a shame. Things are relatively quiet here, thankfully, so be thankful for small miracles. How is the repeater bid in general? If you've been listening to the Tuesday net, has it been noisy during windy nights like it was earlier?
Well, AC2ZV. Well, I don't think it's going to get noisier. I think the noise is something that's locally generated that's near my radio that's causing the problem. I think that, you know, sometimes I hear people talking, like ham radio talk, blah, 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 blah. You know, they can just talk for hours about nothing and about the instruments and the voltages that go in and out and how old the radio is and where it came from and who they got it from and who had it before them and who they're going to give it to next, you know. It just goes on and on. But that I get sometimes, but other times it's just a blast of static.
Okay, I mean, sometimes it's a nearby frequency. If your receiver doesn't have a good ability to isolate your frequency, nearby frequency transmissions can bleed through it. So that sounds like the first case where you're listening in to people having conversations, and the other is just non-specific radio wave noise produced by off-spec electrical equipment, power supplies, fluorescent ballasts, solar cell inverters, all kinds of things will produce harmonic rich RF noise in the background, unfortunately.
Well, AC2ZV. Roy, I'm just wondering, how much power does an arc welder put off? When they were using the arc transmitters and stuff like that, they had a spark gap transmitter, and that used, you know, they could put a lot of power through that spark gap. I wonder, do you know much about that? Did that melt down the spark gaps? I don't know. It's interesting.
I believe that you needed to, it had a limited life expectancy. It kind of ate up. It probably had carbon points, and every so often you just kind of remove them and replace them with a new set of carbon points.
That sounds like it might be like a carbonite, a carbon spark, you know. I was looking at these Tesla things, and they used the spark like that to generate the high frequency, and then they shot the spark into the tank coil, and that's how he was getting the high frequencies. And I think the arc welding that they're doing there must have spectrum up in the 150 megahertz.
Yeah, I'm sure it's rich in harmonics. It should have filters, though, to kind of limit it to some extent. I mean, you can't shield it entirely unless you kind of put it into a Faraday cage. And most welders don't want to work in a Faraday cage. It can get very sweaty and such. But there must be some reasonable filtration for the high harmonics of the device. It's just, you know, if you happen to live next to the building that's using it, it's, you know, it doesn't attenuate enough to limit, and it kind of screws up even FM receptions.
Well, the real situation is they're building a jail over here, and they're just 8 stories high. They're going for 15, and they have these 2 giant cranes, and they're just lifting the thing up off the ground day by day, and these men are working there day and night, you know, walking on the steel, and you can see them welding and stuff like that. So it's just, and there's just noise in the street that's clanging and banging. You get radio noise. Maybe it'll calm down in about a year, I think, when they're done. And I hope it doesn't block the repeater, because it's going right in that direction from my house to the repeater.
Yeah, it may lead to some attenuation of the signal, but hopefully not enough to give you too much trouble. It's a shame they're not using newer technology. I just recently saw some YouTubes where they demonstrate the new laser welding devices, and they look interesting. A high-power laser in one head and a gas jet right below it that feeds inert gases like argon as it welds. Those wouldn't cause you any problems unless the power supply to the laser did. It doesn't produce an arc. It just produces laser heating.
Yeah, that sounds like pretty fancy stuff. They probably build rocket ships out of stuff like that. Like, you know, that's what they're doing to put these giant things together. But I don't think they do that for steel workers.
Well, you know, even the Chinese are selling them to consumers. So it's you know, most people have their old gear. This is new gear. But I don't think it's incredibly expensive and only industrial. It's just a matter of, as time goes on, people will start to shift over, assuming that they need the features and it's not a problem getting argon tanks.
I don't know. Is argon, how do you get argon out of the air? Do you just pump a bunch of air through and somehow filter it out? It seems very difficult to do that.
Not particularly. Atmospheric oxygen is, 22% oxygen, 70-whatever percent nitrogen, and about 1.5% of argon. So these places that are selling tanks of nitrogen and tanks of oxygen just kind of take it off of the differential filters for it of the atmosphere. So you don't have to find it in caves or anything. You just kind of run through enough atmospheric gases until you collect enough liquid pressurized argon. That's probably why argon is so popular. It's the only inert gas that has any kind of significant percentage of the atmosphere. You know, helium is 0.000 whatever percent. So I mean, argon is much more readily available than any of the other noble gases.
Yeah, like right now, the radio is getting full noise, and it's coming in full blast into the radio, not stop, and I can hear myself. So it's very difficult to be net control operator, I think, next time for me. We'll see how it goes, but I've had this problem recently. Back to you, Roy.
Well, as you pointed out, if you're so inclined and you have a decent EchoLink connection, you could operate through EchoLink and kind of get around that.
Yeah, I think that's what I'm going to have to do. I just changed my phone. This phone seems to do it better than my other phone. My other phone was breaking up, but this one is just a lot better. So anyway, maybe that's my way out.
Yeah, you know, I mean, as long as you have access to EchoLink and, you know, every so often the connection gets screwed up for one reason or another, but if it's working, that gives you another option.
Okay, let's do another call and see if anybody has got anything to weigh in on.
Okay, once again, I am AC2GS, Alpha Charlie, 2 Gulf Sierra. Name is Roy. I'm the control operator for the Kings County Radio Club Technical Net. We're here on the second and fourth Wednesday of every month, starting at 9 p.m., going for as long as anyone has any questions or comments or topics. And we're open for business tonight, and we wish you all a happy and healthy Thanksgiving feast tomorrow. Don't eat too much, but have some fun. But if you're out there and you would like to ask a question or bring up some kind of technical topic, then please hit that push to talk and ID yourselves. Give me your first name and your call sign.
Okay, hi, this is AC2ZV. I got a good technical question for you, Roy. As it turned out, I'm trying to make a Raspberry Pi, and I tanked these 64 gigabyte disks, and they're totally unreadable. And the question is, can I get them back, or should I just go buy more?
I think you mean secure disk, SD card, right? Because that's different than what it's not really a drive, it's just memory chips. So what I think you're asking is, you have some SD cards and they're unreadable, and what should you do about them? Is that the question?
Yeah, this is AC2CB. That's the question. I had these micro SD cards that I got for the Raspberry Pi, and I was supposed to do this formatting routine with them, but whatever I did didn't work. And then I look at them on my computer, and one of them doesn't come up at all, and the other one comes up and says it's got a little bit of memory space left in it, but not, you know, like the whole 64 gigabits doesn't show up. And then you reformat it, and it just says like it's 500 megabytes, and the other one, it won't even show up on the on the disk utility. So it's like I just tanked these two chips. They're like micro SD cards, and we're just trying to do this download thing with the Ladina Escher thing, and just didn't work, and now the cards are useless.
When was the last time they worked?
I never seen them work. I got them new from a manufacturer, and I took them out of the bag and I put it in there, and it looked like, and it registered it was 64 gigs. And then I did this routine on it where I downloaded the image file, and then I put the image file, and then I pointed it to the flash disk, and then flashed it, and then it went through this whole like loading and verifying process, and right at the end it says, oops, something didn't work, something about compression, la la la, and then, you know, too bad. And then I tried to reformat it and try again, and it wouldn't reformat. And that's like what the problem is.
How legitimate was the company you got them from? Is it something respectable, or is it some place where stuff falls off of trucks?
From Adafruit, you know. I mean, I bought everything from Adafruit. I bought a little kit for myself. I'm trying to do this experiment. And I bought all the parts, and I'm working with an intern to try to get it to work. And I have a Mac, and I suppose if I had a Linux machine, it wouldn't be a problem. But I don't. And so there doesn't seem to be a way to get the chip back. I looked in some forums, and so I can't find anything that's going to do it except maybe Linux commands. But even so, these people make suggestions and then answer, oh, I'll try it, you know, in these boards and stuff. But nobody ever says, this really works. They just said, do this and do that and try this, you know, but nobody said, this works. So I don't know. It's still a question for me.
Yeah, I mean, one of the big problems is getting random answers off of the internet is a lot of times it's useless noise. Because, you know, a lot of times the people who got things to work don't really know what got things to work. They just kept trying random stuff until it worked, and then they try to kind of reverse engineer it and give people bad advice. Offhand, I think the safest, easiest approach is get yourself a couple of new SD cards. They're relatively inexpensive. Get a very good brand name like SanDisk has a very, very good reputation. And, you know, you can get a couple off of Amazon for very few bucks. You know, the price of SD cards have plummeted over the years. Rather than, you know, you might be able to get it back, but I mean, once it's been screwed up, who knows if it'll get screwed up again, and then that's another problem that you have to deal with. Rather than, you know, you get a nice, clean, new, fresh one out of Amazon, and it's less likely to give you any trouble down the road.
Well, I got this from Adafruit, and they do have a support department, but you can't call support, you have to post. So I posted my problem on the Adafruit website, and they said they'll take 1 or 2 days, but being Thanksgiving, I don't expect an answer until sometime next week. But, you know, I'm probably going to buy a couple more cards, but it just seems silly that if you just make one fatal move, it's gone, and you can't get it back, because I use SD cards in my other equipment. I have it in my cameras, and I have it in various places. I can always reformat them, and they come back to the same size. But now, the chip doesn't get recognized by the disk utility that you could reformat it, come back to the 64 gig size. It just insists to come back at a much less size. It's very weird.
Yeah, it's a bit strange. Usually when things like that happen, it's because they're not legitimate SD cards. Especially if you buy them off of eBay, or even, unfortunately, sometimes Amazon. Every so often I tell people, if they think that Amazon is such a great company, to go searching for inexpensive terabyte SD cards. And, you know, you'll find probably to this day, ridiculous things like they charge $16 for a terabyte, and no one in their right mind would sell you something at that price. That's less expensive than it costs to manufacture. What these off-brand or Chinese or counterfeits do is they just modify the access, the read-write chip, and you can have it display any capacity that you want. You could take a, you know, 8 meg SD card and put it in a programmer and change the read-write chip to say it's a terabyte. And so when you put it in the computer, it'll come up as a terabyte SD card. But if you write to it, it just kind of rewrites over the same 8 gigabytes or whatever capacity it truly is. And then if you do that enough, it fouls the file allocation table so much that it just comes up as complete garbage. I don't know if that's what's going on with you. It shouldn't be, because Adafruit is a legitimate company, but that's the closest thing to what you're describing that I've seen happen. You know, there's lots of YouTubes. If you Google YouTube for high capacity fake SD cards, they show a lot of them.
Yeah, I don't think that's the problem. I think the problem is that somehow the image file, because it's a .img file that is trying to be loaded through this process of flashing it, so that if you get the image file, then you put the image file in the Pi, and then it wakes up and gives you a desktop and, you know, a whole computer that will run off the chip. But I think it's the image file that's written a different kind of format totally, so that when the Apple goes in there to read it, the Apple OS can't understand whatever it is the image file is, because it's written in AMD Linux or something like that language machine code that would work with the Raspberry Pi. So then the Apple says, I can't deal with that, but you'd think it'd let me reformat it and bring it back to 64 gigabyte, you know, FAT 32 thing, but it doesn't.
I don't know exactly if that might be the problem. It usually isn't. It's not that there's not, you know, your SD card that goes into your Apple is not in Apple code. It could be an Apple format, but usually after a few years, all the other operating systems have the capacity to read and write other operating systems file format. You know, FAT 16 and FAT 32 are intrinsic Windows and MS-DOS formats, but I think Apple is able to read those. So it could be a different file format, but I would think if you had a sophisticated formatting program, it just wipes everything and rewrites it. So it shouldn't have problems dealing with previously written formats. But I don't know. It's very strange. I've never had that problem. I mean, sometimes you have these weird little things that there are subformats that some operating systems can read, but they can't write to them. But again, if you go down to the level of a low-level partition formatter, it should be able to smash it. So probably there's some utility available for Windows that might be primitive enough to just wipe the whole thing clean and reset it. So, you know, Google formatting software for your Apple and see if you can find something that boasts that it's capable of just about getting rid of any previously formatted formatting aspect.
Yeah, I mean, what I find in these Reddit trails is the most interesting. One of the things that mentioned in that stuff, in that search I made, was that the card reader itself may not be up to being able to read the full 64 gigabyte, and so maybe that could be an issue, that the card reader is too old to read the format that's required to get the little card to work. Do you think that that's a possibility? Because my stuff is pretty old.
Okay. Theoretically, yeah. If it's very old, it would have to be very old. I mean, nowadays, their capabilities for terabytes. So you would have to go probably back to 15 years ago to get to a point where 64 gigabytes was a kind of a built-up system, and you could have a card reader that only has enough pin leads to read, 4 gigabits or 8 gigabits. So that's possible. It kind of depends on how old your reader is. If that's the case, again, they're dirt cheap. You know, you could buy a multi-card reader for probably $10-$15 on Amazon.
Yeah, I've got a lot of those in different places. I just happen to have the old one that I was using that day because I like it because it's green, and the other ones are black. But I do have other ones sitting around the house. So it's just one of these things. I don't have more chips to keep playing with. So I'm thinking maybe I'm going to have to buy 5 chips now because I blew out two of them in just like, I don't know, 10 minutes of playing around on the internet trying to download this stuff, and I did it all wrong, probably.
Well, you know, under the circumstances, if I was you, I would go rummaging around for the newest card reader you have and put the old broken cards in and see if you can force format them into something usable.
Yeah, I'm gonna dust off the PC as well, because I think the PC is probably going to be the thing that might have a different, because the Mac, you know, it's trying to do MS-DOS, but it doesn't do the whole thing. And it, I think the 32 has to do with the 32 gigabytes frame size. I don't know, but this is 64 gig thing. Do you know about that, what MS-DOS 32 is about, how big of a, it's not how big the storage can be, it's how big a file can be, right?
Okay, there's a whole bunch of different things going on. As far as a file formats, they're called FAT16 and FAT32. They have to do with the addressable sectors. You know, FAT16 has a 16-bit address. FAT32 has a 32-bit address, so it's able to address a lot more, and you can have a higher capacity drive using FAT32 rather than FAT16. But it's not the same as MS-DOS. You know, MS-DOS is a very, at this point, a primitive operating system that goes back decades. And, you know, whether you're using it on a 32-bit chip, you know, from, I don't know, 20 years ago, or a 64-bit chip that all the computers now are 64, and, you know, 32 is kind of ancient. So I think you're thinking more in case of FAT32 and FAT16, which is not an operating system. It's just a file format of how it sets the file allocation table and addresses the sectors so that you can write to them and then read back them.
Right, so that the size of the drive, whether it's 8 gigs, 10 gigs, 16, 32, 64 gig, has nothing to do with the FAT32 thing, but I think that there is a file size limit that you can't make files bigger than so much, because my recorder, it goes up to about 4 gigs and then kicks out and makes another kachunka. I mean, you can have to slice the little recordings together, but it just goes in 4 gig chunks.
Yeah, you could your files are limited by the sector addresses that you're capable of. There's another non-FAT method that is kind of more open-ended. So, you know, when you go into a Windows machine, it kind of lets you format different types in different ways with different size file allocation tables, and you know, so yeah, something with more sector numbers can store a much bigger single file. With FAT 32, or forget if it's FAT 32 or FAT 16, you're kind of limited to, you know, I mean, back in the old days, people would kind of laugh at you if you said a gigabyte is not big enough, because, you know, they had hard drives that had 2 megabytes. But nowadays, with terabytes and such, you know, different formats allow for a different size file sizes, individual file sizes. So you're correct that way. But you know, if you operate a Windows machine, it and the format kind of gives you the ability to select which format you want to set that particular drive at. You know, when you first started out and you use the format command.
Yeah, I mean, I know that the Mac screws things up, and when I have SD cards, I basically manage them by throwing stuff in the trash rather than having the Mac reformat it. So I think that the Windows is going to have better tools for me. And I think that the same card readers will work in the Windows USB slot or a Mac USB. I don't think that makes a difference. So I don't think there's just a difference about how the file is formatted.
Well, you know, you got to kind of decide on what kind of a format you want for your storage device. And once you've chosen, you know, it's a little bit more difficult. You pretty much have to erase it and rewrite it in the new format. You know, I think Apple File System is what they call their default file system. But, you know, like I said, there's MS-DOS, which is FAT. There's something called EXFAT. that. That's more cross compatibility with a different operating systems. So there's different ways of doing that, and there are vanilla formatting tools. A lot of times Apple is very vanilla. There are some format changes that for some strange reason it can't accomplish, but you can get a free shareware one that accomplishes all those. So it's just a matter of a little extra work Googling.
Well, I think, thank you very much. I think you've basically confirmed what I was thinking about this. Let's see if anybody else has got any questions.
Okay, once again, I am AC2GS. My name is Roy. I'm the control operator for the Kings County Radio Club Technical Net. We're here on the second and fourth Wednesday of most months, and we're still open for business. If anyone has any questions or comments or topics for discussion, please hit that push to talk and ID yourselves. Well, William, it seems like it's just you and me on the air here tonight.
Yeah, Roy, well, it's a good thing you're just not in it by yourself. It's just sort of lonely to be talking to the microphone and not get anybody to say what's going on. But I think that there's a, let's see, maybe I'm wrong about this. I got the wrong event. There's supposed to be this turkey trot event that the ARES is doing. I'm looking it up, and I'm not finding it on the phone. But I think they're supposed to be out there tomorrow morning with the ham radios and running around in the park, you know, in case anybody gets... freezing exhaustion or whatever it is, but they use 10 radio operators, but I can't do it, and I know we don't have other listeners, so it doesn't make much difference. But anyway, I think about them.
Okay, well, you know, I don't know what to make of ARES. Once again, the way that I kind of see them these days is as I'm about to start my technical net, you know, they're on the other radio, and thankfully, they're only on it for about 1 or 2 minutes, and otherwise it would desense my LineMarker radio and screw up my recordings and such. But that's really not much of a problem because they're barely on. As I joked before, you kind of need a stopwatch for them.
Yeah, well, it is kind of an efficient thing. I mean, just be here at exactly 8 o'clock, you know, and that's just a way of just checking in. And so if you're into doing that, you know, it's just a way, okay, it's not a big time commitment, but you have to be on time. And then if you have a group of people that could do that, it would be kind of fun. But, you know, I always thought that we were supposed to be worrying about rescuing people and learning first aid and all this other stuff, and it just doesn't seem to be like that. But I keep my hat in the ring because it's something to do, new people to meet, and it's ham radio, so that's kind of fun.
Yeah, well, I don't think you should judge ARES in general by Kings County ARES. You know, each ARES kind of sets themselves up to do more or less than an emergency service provides. I'm sure out there are versions of ARES that get much more involved with emergency situations than Kings County, because Kings County has a very good emergency infrastructure to begin with. So there isn't that much need. So you'll see, as I'm sure you have, that a lot of what ARES does is act as a kind of backup communications asset for events that aren't emergencies, really. So, you know, whatever works, you know, if you're out there in the hinterlands where there's very little hired help and everything is volunteer, then I'm sure those areas, ARES are different creatures than the ones in Kings County.
Yeah, I think it's a lot different. I think if you didn't have services, there'd people be out there trying to do it. But I mean, we're really covered with lots of services here in the city, so in a way, it doesn't make that much sense. I don't know, Roy. Don't have anything else, but you got any Thanksgiving Day plans? What's going on with your Thanksgiving?
Nothing particularly special. I usually spend it at my sister's house. Her family gets together, and you know, we have the traditional turkey.
Yeah, well, this year we're doing something a little different. My wife has had to cook like crazy every year, and so we're going to see what it's like to have it catered. So we're having a caterer show up at 10:30 with a whole turkey dinner. We still have to deal with, you know, putting it up and serving and everything, but we're not spending all day and all night tonight cooking for all these guests he's got coming tomorrow. So anyway, that's going to be fun tomorrow. Right now it's a lull before the storm.
Yeah, it sounds like a great idea. I've heard a couple of families that have kind of shifted into catered dinners, and I'm sure that puts a lot of have less stress on people. You know, what you can easily do when you're 30 years old gets kind of more difficult when you hit 70.
Yeah, and, you know, you tend to get tired quicker. And, you know, there's other health problems you have to deal with and dodge in between and so much other things going on. Anyway, so I hope you have the fun and enjoy yourself on Thanksgiving. I'm looking forward to seeing the kids and having them mess up the house. And so we'll see how that goes.
Yeah, well, I mean, that's the job of kids. They have a lot of extra energy and they gotta spend it someplace. So that's what they do. They run around. Eventually, they'll get tired like we've got tired and slow down. And, you know, the next generation will kind of knock everything over.
Well, the thing is, they tend to pass out on the train, and then when you get home, they're back full of energy again. So it's like you go to an event, and they're at the event, and they're fine, and all of a sudden they pass out for about 15 or 20 minutes, and then they're eating dinner, and then the next thing you know, they're on the train, they pass out again on the train, and you get home, you're like, oh, you get bedtime. Oh, no, we're not tired.
Yeah, that's what it is to be young. I vaguely remember it.
Hey, Roy, you know, my router went out. Con Ed had a glitch, and the router decided it was toast. So I've heard of this company, Ubiquiti. Have you ever heard of a company called Ubiquiti?
Yes, they're not cheap, but they're very high quality, very good networking equipment. Although it depends on who's your internet service provider. Some will allow you to use third-party routers, but some won't. You know, if you have Fios, I don't believe Fios likes people using other routes. Well, nowadays they do allow it. They don't like it, but they allow it. In previous generations, you simply couldn't do it because it had a coax cable instead of an Ethernet connector. So if you have Fios, but your wire from your Fios into your router is an Ethernet cable, you probably can use a generic router. And Ubiquiti is, like I said, it's not cheap, but it's certainly high quality.
Yeah, I had this Linksys router, and it's been working for years, and it's like 2013 vintage, you know. So, and I looked it up, and it says, oh yeah, routers go out of date after about 5 years. And then it's always been telling me that it has low security on the password and stuff like that because it's not secure. So the fact that it finally died is a good excuse to go out and get a more modern piece of equipment that has, I think, proper authentication and everything. But my situation is I just have a Spectrum cable modem, and then I plug my router into their thing. I don't have Wi-Fi. They just give me internet, and I take that, put it in the WAN port, and I use my own equipment from there out. So anyway, that's my system. I don't have a Fios. I tried to get this Fios. It was a wireless service, supposed to be this 5G, and the service was so poor, I couldn't get any speed out of it, and then it would cut out all the time. And they said, oh, you got to change Windows, you know. I only have two windows in the house. It wouldn't. And it's like the equipment had to be next to a window to be able to receive, and I don't know. It was no good. I thought it would be a great idea to get rid of Spectrum, but and Spectrum gets busy in the afternoon, and it doesn't really give you the speed.
Have you checked relatively recently if Fios has fiber to your home? Because, wireless is problematic. But, you know, as the years go on, Fios puts more fiber optic out there in different parts of New York. So, you know, it always pays if you haven't checked in for a year or two to check in with Fios and see if they have actual optical cable available in your area.
Hey, Roy, I don't think so. I'm in downtown Brooklyn. I mean, it's, you know, you have to chop up the street to do anything down here. There's not going to be any Fios coming here anytime soon. I checked on it a few years ago, and it's like, no, forget it. I mean, we have actually old copper lines draped all over the back of the building with these booths with all these wires hanging out of it all over the place, coming up from manholes in the street still from Verizon around here. But I don't think they're going to be in the mood to put up any fiber. And they'd have to get all these rights of way in everybody's backyard to put up. I don't know how that would work. They'd have to put up a hub and then all this. It doesn't seem like it'd be good for this neighborhood.
Oh, okay. I just thought it's rather easy to just check. It's automated at this point. You type in your area code, I think, and it just tells you whether it's available or not available. It might not be available. I don't know. I remember early on I tried and it wasn't available for my neighborhood, and I tried a year or two later and it was. And I get pretty good value for it. I have to upgrade it because my stuff is so old that I keep on getting these little notices from Verizon saying that they really want to move on to newer technology that's not compatible with my old stuff. Could they please come by and swap it out? And one of these days when I have the patience, I'll let them do that. But, you know, it's a very simple thing to, you know, you don't have to call them up and ask them and have to deal with a salesperson. You can just do it on a web page.
Hey, Roy. Yeah, I'm checking that out. It's not going to work like that because what it is, it's a spam sucker. Because you have to give them your address, your apartment number, your phone number, and your email in order to get them to check your address. And if you do that, then they're going to start calling you and sending you email and everything. And it just turns on the spam machine. I don't know. I don't feel like pushing that button. I tell you, one time, I was lucky. I had a lot of fiber at the TV station, and we had 15 POTS lines. And after 9/11, they were scrambling to get copper, and so they put in Fios for my 15 POTS lines so they could get the copper and use it for other bigger clients than I was.
Okay, I didn't realize they had changed that badly. It used to be a much more painless type of a thing. Yeah, my understanding is that the telephone companies would really, if they could get rid of all the copper and change it up to optical cable, they would. So I don't know. I don't know how much investment they're doing for old neighborhoods and such. But, you know, it's becoming more and more difficult. I have a friend who lives on Greenwich Village, and he got his telephone switched to fiber optics and had nothing but trouble with it for a year or two after that. And that's, you know, Greenwich Village. So you can imagine the difficulty of changing up the wiring places like that.
Yeah, I mean, it's ridiculous. I mean, those streets have been there for many, many years, and so many pipes crisscross, and nothing is documented. I mean, if you were going to be able to do that, you'd have to have a way of sticking it invisibly on the outside of buildings or something, and then, you know, making it go through walls. It just doesn't seem feasible.
Well, I guess that's probably what's going on with why they're promoting generations of cell phone technology. Eventually, their dream come true is to have it all wireless, just kind of get it off of the air. But the problem is the newer generations have shorter practical lengths of operation. You need to put up a lot more cell towers per unit area than for previous generations of technology. William, thank you so much for joining me tonight. I would hate to have had to talk to myself for the last hour. I think we're going to kind of call it a night. Until next time, thank you so much.
Yeah, Roy, thank you very much. I enjoyed the chat and your nice observations and all the comments about this rise. I think it's an honor to be able to be your co-host tonight. I learned a lot. Thanks a lot. Have a great evening and a happy Thanksgiving.
Thank you. You too, William. VizNet has been brought to you by the Kings County Radio Club. Our club is an ARRL-affiliated club based in Brooklyn, New York, and we meet on the first Wednesday of each and every month. Our next meeting will be December 3rd. It's going to be our holiday party. It's going to be elections for the executive board. So if you're a member, please try to attend. Anyway, it's going to be a hybrid meeting, which includes a virtual meeting using Zoom software. Club members will be emailed with the details of the meeting. The physical location of the in-person meeting is the Knights of Columbus at 1511 10th Avenue. Non-members wishing to join a general club meeting can email me, AC2GS, with some form of identification for the required link. Although our meetings informally begin after 7 p.m., our formal regular general meeting starts at 8 p.m. and continues until anywhere from 9 to 9:30, depending upon the number of points that need to be covered. We have a weekly 2-meter club net every Tuesday night night at 9 p.m. on this repeater, and this technical net meets on the second and fourth Wednesday of each month at 9 p.m. We also sponsor a 10-meter net every Sunday morning at 11 a.m. on 28.380 megahertz upper sideband, and we also offer audio stream of our KC2RC repeater on the internet, as well as our 10-meter net. You just type into your browser stream.kc2rc.com. Members as well as non-members are welcome to join and participate, although we do appreciate it when our fellow hams join our club. And as always, an application is readily available on our club's website. If you would like to contact a host of this technical net, simply address your email to tech@kc2rc.com. We maintain an active website at www.kingscountyradioclub.com or www.kc2rc.com, which offers archives of this technical net, amateur radio news, original articles, and technical forums. Please visit our website and participate. Our website hosting services were generously donated by the local Brooklyn-based web hosting company, Three Aliens Web Hosting, who we would like to thank. As the great philosopher Jimi Hendrix once said, knowledge speaks but wisdom listens, so try to listen a bit more and talk a bit less. It's time to roll this all up and shut it all down, but we'll be back again December 10th, and you're welcome to join us. Thanks to all the people that participated tonight. That's me and William, and especially without you guys, I'd just be talking to myself. So this is Roy AC2GS, and I'll be going clear and getting the heck out of here. Everyone who might be actually listening, have a great Thanksgiving. Stay safe, be well, and we'll talk to you down the line. This is AC2GS, and I am clear.